ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
The beach is Australia's playground. Our beaches are world famous. Manly, Bells, Cottesloe, Kira, Noosa, that's just naming a few. We're blessed with some of the most majestic coastline found on the planet, and culturally, it's where Australians flock for recreation. Tragically, this was shattered on Sunday when an act of terror at Australia's most famous beach, Bondi, hijacked a time of celebration. This week on Australia Wide, we're going to take a deep dive into why the beach and the ocean is so central to Australia's identity. Every Christmas, my family pack up and head to Ledge Point, just north of Perth in Western Australia, for the summer holidays. It's a beautiful place known as the Silver Coast, and you can really see why at sunset. As the sun sets over the sea, sand ripples fill with water on the shoreline, and everything glows this lovely silvery white. It's stunning. But this fine white sand is causing a problem for people living along this stretch of Western Australia. The houses under Berg Street are fighting a losing battle with the might of the ocean. The dunes in front of their homes are falling into the sea, and the only thing holding them back is sandbags and layers of driftwood piled high by homeowners in a bid to protect their properties. And this problem of coastal erosion is not unique to the Silver Coast of Western Australia. Climate change is a significant factor, with more frequent and severe storms lashing the coast. Surf clubs, homeowners and local councils, from Newcastle in New South Wales to the Limestone Coast in South Australia to Inverloch in Victoria, are all trying different ways to hold back the power of the sea. Some of the weapons in their arsenal is building large seawalls and pylons to protect the shoreline. Another method is to protect the natural barrier of the sand dunes by sandbagging and maintaining native vegetation. Now, most Australians live near the coast, and right in front of our eyes, our coastline is changing. So what can be done about it, and who's responsible for fixing a growing problem? And importantly, who is responsible for footing the bill? I'm Sinead Mangan, and this is Australia Wide, coming to you from Whadjuk Country, Perth.
Tensions over the management of erosion at Wamberal Beach have escalated. Police were called to Pacific Street following reports of an altercation.
A decades-long problem spanning the length of the coast is making waves once again.
It's just been kicked down the road by government after government and not addressing it.
A lot of places in the world don't have beaches like this, but we do, and we should, like, make sure that we can keep them intact.
It's hard to imagine the jetty surrounded by water, but it was once and not that long ago. And it was pretty deep. Boats could tie up along its inside.
We've lost our beautiful jetty. I want Jai to be able to do what his dad was able to do. And that's same as my kids, jumping off the jetty, you know, coming down here at night, being able to fish off the jetty, watching the beautiful big manta rays that we used to have swim underneath the jetty. You know, at the moment, we can't do any of that.
So we're looking in the order of about 3 million cubic metres of sand to really make the beach healthy again.
Put a wall there, and what you get is these big waves crashing against the wall and dragging all that sand offshore.
Unfortunately, it makes the community choose between protection with the seawall and maintaining the amenity.
As we've heard there, beaches around Australia are at risk of disappearing, with climate change resulting in severe weather systems that lash up and down the coastline. And as we've heard, tensions can be high for people living along Australian beaches, that their lifestyle is under threat. To talk about this issue, I'm joined by a panel of people who are very much in the thick of it. My colleague Daniel Cutchell, who's been reporting on issues in the Gippsland region of Victoria. On the opposite side of the country in Western Australia, I'm joined by Gingin Shire President Linda Balcom, and coastal engineer Angus Gordon, who joins me from the beachside suburb of Narrambeam, which is north of Sydney in New South Wales. Well, welcome everyone, and thanks for talking to me on Australia Wide. Angus, let's start with yourself. Now, you've been working on coastal erosion for your whole career and live in an area north of Sydney that's deeply affected by it. I think as Australians, we assume that we have this fundamental right to access our stunning beaches, and that right harks back to Roman times. Can you tell me what has a Roman emperor got to do with my right to walk on the beach and go for a swim in summer?
The Roman Emperor Justine was very keen on putting in place doctrine in regards to what was called the public trust. And this is to preserve matters for the broader community. And so the things that are within the public trust doctrine is the ability to breathe, for example, that air is free. Also, that rainfall is free. Even though you pay your water rates, that's for the way it's processed, but the water is free. Part of that, strangely enough, was that he also, in that doctrine, included free access to foreshores. And that came through from the Roman law to the British law. It's been picked up in a number of the states in America, and funnily enough, is actually somewhat buried, but within New South Wales law.
That's incredible that imprint of the Roman times is still on how we think about and in the law of how we can access the beach. So if that's, you know, that was the thinking back then, but now we've got a changing picture on our shorelines and we've got rising seas. Why does that make that picture very complex now?
Well, I think it's not just the rising seas that's doing that. I think when a lot of Australia was subdivided, if you go back, you know, 100 years or more, there wasn't a knowledge of coastal processes. And so quite a lot of that subdivision included what has been assumed to be the public beach. And so that in reality, there's a lot of beach that is in fact in private ownership. And this hasn't bothered us in the past so much because the use of the beach was quite often just beach shacks, small houses and that. But as time's gone on, we've gone for large masonry buildings and there's been a complete different think within the community as to the use of the coastal area. That then means that people have been wanting to define their boundaries much more, and in defining their boundaries, and then given those boundaries were poorly established in the first place, we're starting to see quite a lot of the beach going into private ownership anyway, and that's without sea level rise. Okay, so when people talk about climate change, they think in terms, and a lot of the reporting's about sea level rise. The important thing to remember about climate change is that it's actually a shift in latitude of the weather systems. And the important point about that is that it means that the coast is responding in a different way, quite a bit more than just sea level rise. It's actually responding to the change in what's called wave energy flux. That's the direction of the waves.
So that's what you mean by shift in latitude.
That's correct. But it's one that isn't reported, not well understood, but it's one of the reasons why we're seeing so much change occurring on the coasts, which doesn't logically necessarily link into the relatively modest sea level rising we're seeing.
The other challenging thing that you've said there is that, you know, private ownership of beaches in Australia, because I do think, and I think Linda's shaking her head here in the studio, we don't think of beaches as a private ownership issue. Like I think of that in the United States, but I certainly don't think of that happening here in Australia.
Yeah, well, I think, again, that's a problem because the, as I say, the subdivision that took place over 100 years ago was done at a time when governments didn't have very much of an understanding of coastal processes. And so you find that quite a few beaches have been pegged out as being partly for private ownership.
Mm-hmm. Linda, now, along the Silver Coast of Western Australia, your community is experiencing firsthand coastal erosion. Can you tell me what's happening there?
So in about 2015-2016, we had serious erosion in seabird. It had been happening for a while, but we had to go to the state, or the community went to the state, and we had a seawall built, which cost about $2 million. And at that stage, that was then left to council to look after. So that's over 10 years ago. It's probably only got another 5 years of life left. But since then, we've had more erosion going north. And we've had, this year, serious erosion at the north end of Lancelin, which has affected buildings and a caravan park.
We've heard about a stranded jetty, which is also in your area. We heard about that a little bit earlier. How are these changes affecting the lifestyle of people living in Gingin?
Well, it's a definite concern because people are emotional about their town, and especially in Lancelin. Lancelin has two problems. It has coastal erosion and it's below sea level, so it's going to have inundation problems as well. So if the sea, if the ocean breaks through the sand dunes, then we have an inundation. So that's our big concern. And at the north end of Lancelin, that's where it could happen. And it's interesting about the latitude, about the waves and that, because that's what happened this year. Usually the waves are coming from one direction and then they'll change, but it didn't change as quickly as it usually does, and that's what's caused a lot of the erosion at the north end of Lancelin. So it stayed in the wrong direction, really, for quite a while. People want something to happen. We have a CHIRMAP in place which has managed retreat at the moment. They want that changed. And it has to be changed to be more flexible for the occasion, I think, and how people are going to deal with it. When we get any funding, it's all about sand renourishment. That's not always pleasing to people. They want hard. They want barriers. Hard barriers. They want it to stop. But where do we get the money from that? We're a small shire. State government only give you a certain amount of money. Federal government's the same, you know, and what hard barriers, what's that going to cause down the track? So it is such a complex issue. I'm no expert. That's what the experts have to give us that advice on.
Well, we will ask Angus a bit more about that later. But Danielle, in your patch, the local surf club is struggling to hold back the tide, quite literally. How are things at the Inverloch Surf Club now? Can you tell me about that?
So they've had some sandbags, a sandbag wall installed at the foot of the clubhouse, which sits on the dunes right on the beach. Those sandbags were installed about 5 years ago. They're now, they're getting to the end of their life. They're starting to fail. There are patches where the sandbags have actually collapsed. At the same time, we're seeing ingress and further erosion from the water on either side of that sandbag wall, to the east and west of the clubhouse, which is essentially eating around back into the dune and putting the clubhouse at danger again of basically just falling off the dune into the sea. So there's currently workers out there building more sandbags. Those will be added onto the east and west sides to extend that wall. And it's hoped that that will buy around 5 to 10 years of time for the clubhouse again.
Well, you visited there just recently. Let's hear how things are going on the ground, because really this investigation you've done really shows how complicated this issue is. Let's have a listen.
It's busy down at Inverloch Surf Beach at the moment. It's not just the tourists and locals venturing out as the summer sun finally arrives. Excavators and trucks are swinging back and forth across the sand, building sandbags to shore up the eroding dunes. Inverloch Surf Beach has been eroding for over a decade, losing more than 70 metres of foreshore since 2012. Sand renourishment has been carried out, and sandbags were installed outside the town's Lifesavers Clubhouse 5 years ago, in an attempt to stop the dune it sits on top of from washing away. Now, those sandbags are beginning to fail, and water is washing in around the revetment and eating at either side. The clubhouse is once again in serious danger. In late November, works began on an extension to the bank of sandbags, replacing damaged and leaking bags, adding onto each end of the wall, and plugging the holes. Those works are being carried out by contractors for Bass Coast Shire Council, and have been funded by the Department of Energy, Environment and Climate Change, known as DECA.
I'm quite excited about it. I'm relieved, to be honest. The damage was continuing. It wasn't abating at all, so it wasn't slowing down. So this works are really important.
That's Glenn Arnold, president of Inverloch Surf Lifesaving Club and a former Nationals candidate. Mr Arnold says the works are important and he's glad to finally see them happening, albeit in the busiest season of the year. Once the sandbags are done, further dune reconstruction works will begin on the beach in February 2026. DECA told the ABC these will be the first works to be completed under the Victorian Government's Cape to Cape Resilience Plan of Management for this coastline, and are expected to protect the Inverloch foreshore for 5 to 10 years. Mr Arnold says the works will replenish the beach somewhat.
Putting back on the beach approximately 100,000 square cubic metres of sand.
Once the sand settles, next spring revegetation will begin. Mr Arnold says as a local, as well as in his capacity at the Lifesaving Club, it's been disappointing to watch the beach deteriorate.
To see the damage that's been done and knowing after everything that we know now through this journey of agitation, if you like, and consultation with DECA and the government and all that sort of stuff, we know now that things could have been done a lot sooner, and in fact the money was given to get the job done sooner. So I guess I find it a bit sad that we're at this point and that we've had to work so hard to be heard to get the job done.
He's referring to recent documents released under FOI that show the Victorian government applied 3 years ago for a federal grant for works to protect Inverloch's surf beach. The documents were obtained by Nationals MP for Eastern Victoria, Melina Bath. They reveal in 2022 the Victorian Department of Environment, Land, Water and Planning, now DECA, applied for funding under the Federal Coastal and Estuarine Risk Mitigation Program for the Victorian Cape to Cape Resilience Project on ground works. The application said the works would reduce disaster risk to critical infrastructure and services for the Inverloch Township, and on-ground works to mitigate erosion at the beach would need to take place within 2 years to mitigate potential disaster risk if a major erosion inundation event were to occur. $3.3 million in funding was received, but the first works under the Cape to Cape plan won't start until early next year. Ms. Bath says the state government hasn't moved quickly enough to fix Inverloch's erosion problem.
That was 2022. We're nearing the end of 2025 and little to no work has been done. Does it really take that long to work out some mitigation strategies and then a plan?
Ms. Bath said the state government should look to other parts of the country for potential solutions to Inverloch's erosion woes.
To look at and evolve a model that could be used from WA into Victoria is my request to government.
So where to from here for Inverloch as we enter another summer? Mr. Arnold and his team of hundreds of lifesavers will be on patrol over summer and will be ready to respond to any emergencies. They still have access points to the beach, and the sandbag works will pause over the busiest part of the summer break, across January, to allow people to enjoy the beach. But he says there is still a need for a permanent erosion solution, perhaps a hard engineering structure like rocks or a wall. He says the idea of a permanent solution has been contentious, with differing opinions in the town.
So we do need a longer-term solution. We need a solution that takes us from, you know, year 5 or year 10 and beyond. I guess what's frustrating is that around not only Victoria but around Australia, there are multiple examples of permanent solutions that apparently won't get considered down here. The cheap element of that conversation is it always comes back to money. So I think we've got to get past that point and get back to political will.
In the meantime, he'll be keeping a close eye on the dunes as sandbag works inch closer to completion.
Will the clubhouse be here next season? Yeah, I'm pretty confident that it will be. I think that this works will do its job. The sandbag work already out the front that's been there 5 years has done its job, right? It's doing its job. It's protected the club. We just now need to go further to give us some broader protection. So yeah, I feel confident that we'll be here this time next year. Without the works, I'd say no.
My colleague Danielle Cutchell reporting there, and Danielle also joins me on the panel. Now, Linda, you shook your head many times. I could see lots of recognition in what's going on in Inverloch and what's happening in your neck of the woods in the Gingin Shire. What stuck out to you about what they were going through?
I think the whole thing about definitely we're doing a lot of sand renourishment. People get annoyed with that because it's quite expensive to do sand renourishment, but we're trying to build those dunes up and revegetate them because that has always been the natural protection, is the dunes. Finding funding, like I had to beg for funding to assist us to save the Lancelin Sands Hotel and the North End Caravan Park in Lancelin. So finding that funding is always difficult, especially when you're a small shire. We're not a city-based a council where we've got lots of rates. We've got very small rates. So finding money, that's one thing. Finding the solution that everyone's happy with, because some want a hard barrier and others don't. People are concerned and they're scared, and then when they get scared, they get angry. And, that's the concern. I want to make sure our communities feel confident in what we're doing.
Angus, we heard there that the hamlet of Silver Leaves and the town of Inverloch are managing the issue of erosion in two very different ways. There's different ways to skin a cat, I suppose, when it comes to this. What do you think are the more effective solutions to coastal erosion?
Well, I think the first thing is to actually realise that the coastline is flexible in under nature. It's not a fixed thing. Most people think it's fixed, and so when they put assets in threatened areas, they want to fix things to fix the assets. But the coastline keeps changing. And it keeps changing because the coastline is determined by the wave action, and particularly the direction of the wave action. And as I said, once you start to see alterations in the latitudes in which the weather systems are moving, the weather systems generate the winds generate the waves. And so when they change, the coastline just tries to respond to it. What we're actually trying to do is to fight something that is really flexible. It's not fixed. And we're trying to put things in places where we're fixing them. So what you have to realise is that any attempts anywhere to fix something is likely to end up not working in the longer term. So, I mean, I've been to Seabird, I've been to Inverloch, and I've watched what's happening there. And they, I think they that any of those solutions only have a limited life. And if you go overseas, you find exactly the same thing. In the Netherlands, they're spending billions of dollars to try to hold the coastline. In England, they're just walking away from the coastline. So you've got whole villages falling in at Norfolk, for example, in the Norfolk region. In the States, of course, in the Carolinas, particularly North Carolina, the houses are in the surf zone. They're no longer on the beach.
Wow, crazy.
And it's just simply because as a society, we have failed to understand that coastlines are flexible. They're not fixed. And if we try to fix something, we can do it, but for only for a period of time. The nourishment is in fact a good way of dealing with things, because although it's expensive, although it annoys people, at least it's a flexible, adaptive solution that mirrors what nature is doing or trying to do.
And is that the same as backpassing, or is nourishment a different thing again?
No. Backpassing is one of the features of nourishment. Backpassing is where you are taking the sand that's moved somewhere and putting it back where it came from, and just doing that on a repeated basis. So, in other words, you're putting in a flexible system again to try to deal with things. And so backpassing has been very successful in places like Noosa or here at Narrabeen, where backpassing's been going on since the mid-1970s. And now, of course, what you're seeing on the Gold Coast is that they're now putting a backpassing system in as well.
In terms of that problem, the problem of pushing the problem up and down the coast and creating an issue for your neighbour, is there any way of getting around that?
Not really. I mean, it is a matter of understanding that when we start to put non-adaptive structures in place in a environment such as the natural environment of the coastline, you'll only win for a short time. Eventually, you'll lose.
And Linda, you're nodding your head because you talked about $2 million for Seabird, and that's another $2 million that may have to be spent again from what you're saying.
Definitely, that's the problem. And, you know, as a good council, you're looking for now and the future decisions to be made properly. But with coastal erosion, you tend to be making now decisions and worrying about what that's going to look like in the future. Everything everyone's done is a 5 or 10 year solution. It's not a lifetime solution. So how many millions of dollars do you spend trying to put in these solutions? And then somewhere down the track, 5 years later, 10 years later, they're doing the same thing.
And Danielle, where is the money coming from to fix the problem in Inverloch?
It's interesting, actually, listening to you, Linda. There's a similar concern down here at the Bass Coast. The local council, Bass Coast Shire Council, has been quite vocal about the fact that it does not have the money to deal with this problem. It just can't afford it. It has been shelling out for sand renourishment, particularly at Inverloch and Silverleaves, but it's out of money. It can't afford to do a permanent fix. As we heard earlier, in Inverloch, $3.3 million will be coming from a federal grant via the state government, via DECA, to do the Cape to Cape Resilience Project works next year. The other funding has come from the state government. As I said, the local council has put in some of its own money as well. But the perpetual question is, how much do we have to keep throwing at this before we come up with a solution?
The federal government has put aside $50 million in 2023 for various projects across Australia. That was a big sum that I could see. Will this sort of money touch the sides, Angus?
Oh, not really. I mean, it will, as others have said, it will provide short-term solutions, you know, maybe 10, 15, 20 years. But there is no permanent solution to putting fixed structures into an adaptive natural environment.
What about the issue around, you know, houses being built on the beach? And this is something that you're definitely struggling with, Linda, in the Gingin Shire. If we look at Seabird, Ledge Point, Lancelin, there are big homes right on the coast there. What powers do private landholders have if their properties are on, backs onto a public beach? Do they have any powers at all? Are they allowed to be fixing up their own backyard, so to speak?
So at the moment, we need to get our chair map sorted as it is now. We're going through a reference group with local communities to sort that. But we would like to look at a cost-benefit model so that if you are a landowner with on the ocean and you've built on the ocean, that we can look at you sharing the cost of trying to protect if we need to. Mm. So we would like to be able to protect everyone, but we can't. Not financially ourselves, that's what I'm saying. We had this time to protect the Lancelin Sands Hotel, we had to get state funding to help. But to sort to come up with any solutions going forward, we have to look at how everybody's going to financially contribute to that.
Mm. Angus, to your mind, do you think people should have been allowed to build right on the shore?
I think the problem is it's easy to say that in hindsight. But at the time that a lot of that building took place, there wasn't really the knowledge, and certainly there wasn't the understanding amongst the community that really what you needed was adaptive buildings, not fixed buildings. And so in some locations, people have had adaptive buildings, and of course for many years a lot of coastal development was with what we call fishing shacks, which meant that if they were threatened or lost, people just built further back. So the real problem that we've got is that we have been allowing what I would say is an incompatible form of development by making it a fixed development in a flexible environment.
And Linda, in the Shire of Gingin, this is something that you're really looking at, this idea of how people should be able to build in the future. Well, tell me about that.
So since I've been on council from 2019 and the chair map was originally adopted, we do any development on the coastline in those marked areas that for the 100-year could be inundated or coastal erosion, we put caveats and conditions on that it would have to be moved, be able to be moved, if the water reaches a certain point. So going forward, we're making the right decisions. That doesn't please everybody either, mm-hmm. because that's on their title then. But you have to look for the future for people buying. So when they buy that property or it moves on, people need to be aware what they're buying, because not everyone knows.
Danielle, where you are in the Gibson region, I mean, we've touched on that this is a very emotive issue, that sometimes actually it kind of has even come down to kind of fisticuffs on the beach. Can you tell me, like, how do people feel about their lifestyle changing?
People aren't happy. Glenn Arnold, who you heard from earlier, he's grown up in this region and he's watching this beach literally disappear before his eyes. It's, it's disappointing for him, even especially as a surf lifesaver as well, having to sort of change their programs a little bit in terms of how they access the beach or where they allow people to use the beach during summer. Other locals, we saw a community meeting back in July where things did get a bit heated. There are different opinions, as was said earlier, about what to do, how to solve this problem. And, you know, it turned into a bit of a shouting match, if I'm honest. There are really high emotions running around here. Hundreds of people protested this issue back in January this year, calling on all levels of government to provide better support. It just goes to show just how much this beach really means to people in Inverloch.
And just how much the beach means to all of us living in Australia. It's, you know, it is kind of essential to how we feel about the country we live in, I think.
Definitely.
What do you think about that, Angus?
I think that the problem really is that the broader community doesn't necessarily have a very good understanding of coastal processes and what's there. When they get that understanding, and you see that, as I say, in places overseas, then people realise that they need to be adaptive and that the beaches will change and they will lose some beaches and they'll gain others. And I think what we're seeing in Gingin's interesting, because in places it's eroding, but in other places, like where the jetty is now, it's getting it's accreting sand. And that really, again, just simply reflects the difference in the way nature behaves when you see changes in the wind patterns. And by the way, I might just say that I think that the Mayor of Gingin is quite correct, and I think the way they are trying to deal with it is excellent. I'm not sure that they're getting the support they need to from the state government, but I think they're going about it the right way. They're recognising the problem.
It's been great to chat to all three of you today about this issue. Coastal engineer Angus Gordon, Gingin Shire President Linda Balcombe, and my colleague in Gippsland, Danielle Cotchell. Thanks, everybody, for joining me today.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you. Thank you.
And that's Australia Wide for today. I'm Sinead Mangan. Thanks for listening.
ABC Listen.